It's another edition of the Week's End Update here on MMA Rated Radio, and as we like to do every Friday, we've invited another member of the MMA media to discuss the week that was and the week ahead in the world of mixed martial arts. Today, we welcome the great Luke Thomas of BloodyElbow.com. What's going on, Luke?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Always great to be talking with you, and of course, tonight, it's another edition of the IFL, and just last week, you were quite critical of the changes that the IFL is making, starting with their show in August. This is going to be the last one for a couple of months for them. They're introducing the Hex. Before we get to all the Hex talk, is there any reason to have interest in tonight's IFL show?
Yeah, there is. Look, the IFL product isn't bad. If anybody saw their product, their show earlier this month at the Izod Center, in fact, it was quite good. And they've teamed up with HDNet, and look, there's no better way to watch a fight than in HD or live. So, no, they have legit talent. Their shows are very fan-friendly, and they're for all intents and purposes, a good organization. But being good and nice to fans doesn't make you profitable. And having a terrible concept as your launching point, and then sort of stripping away the more ridiculous elements of that as time goes on to fix the problem to a point where you have stripped yourself into nothingness, and then resort to just, you know, look, comical tactics to then repair it, i.e. the Hex, you're not going to win fans over. But look, if you want to see good fights and you want to see good fighters, definitely check it out. It's going to be a good show.
When you say a terrible concept as your launching point, do you mean the team-based system that they had when they first started out?
Yes, but it was just a little bit more than that, right? So not only did they have the team-based format, which was, you know, look, I understand sort of intellectually why they did it, but just in reality, a terrible idea. But then they sort of ran with it a little bit, and they tried to do the IFL draft, as if this is some league that has, you know, you go on ESPN on NFL draft day and it's televised and they've got Mel Kiper Jr. and his dyed hair and everyone's analyzing it and it's this huge deal. The IFL draft was like a tryout for people who they ordinarily didn't find. You know, it just this nonsense concept, you know, and the team concept, besides not really working in MMA anyway, didn't work because none of the teams had sort of a home field venue. There's no Yankee Stadium for the Toronto Razor Claws or San Jose Razor Claws or whoever they were. So it was just this terrible idea, and they tried to keep going with it. And then when they couldn't do that, they would slowly chip at it. And now they've slowly chipped away to the point where they have nothing left. I mean, they have something left, but it's not clear at all what it is.
If the situation stays as is, do you think that there's any way of repairing it? Meaning, let's say I just gave you, you know, the keys to the car for the IFL. Do you think that you can actually make chicken salad out of chicken shit here, or is it really just something that's falling down this hill and they've lost all momentum at this point?
I don't want to succumb to say that I have you know, the poverty of imagination that I can say, nope, they're done, and that's it. There's nothing you can do with it. Probability-wise, no, there's not much you can do with it. So I don't want to say no, not for sure. I mean, they take cars on MTV's Pimp My Ride, and they turn them into sort of something. I mean, you know, feasibly, if you have enough imagination, you can do that. I would say, though, that the best course of action, if I had the money to buy the IFL today, I would scrap everything but the talent rosters. They do have decent talent on their roster. In fact, they've got elite top 10 talent in Wagner Fabiano. They've got other guys like Matt Horwich, Ryan McGivern, Chris Ordesky, Ryan Schultz. I can go on and on. These are legit guys. These guys can fight. So there is always a silver lining insofar as their talent is concerned, but the way in which they've meandered and lost their way and made this confusing, weird product, I would scrap that entirely.
Well, some of the names that you just mentioned are actually competing tonight on the card. Ryan McGivern, Matt Horwich, Ryan Schultz. And at the top of it all is Roy Nelson, who's now going to be facing Brad Imes after Brandon Lee Hinkle had to withdraw from the fight due to injury. I think this is a lot better matchup for many reasons, but most importantly for the credibility of the company. Just having a guy like Hinkle fighting for the title seemed a little strange to me. Imes, a lot of people know him. from the Ultimate Fighter reality show. He's fought in the UFC before and gives a bit of a tougher matchup for Nelson, I think. Let me ask you about Nelson, though. He is the heavyweight champ. That's always sort of the glamour position in any form of combat sports. Is he a top 15, top 10 type of fighter? Or, I mean, given the competition that he faces over there, it's hard to say right now.
It's a little hard to say, but actually I'm a big fan of Big Country. I think he's quite talented. He has a large frame. He doesn't look like, you know, Brett Imes has that 6'7 football player physique. But, you know, as we know in MMA, look at BJ Penn, physique isn't everything. And I think Roy Nelson is actually quite talented. Heavy hands, as he showed against Zhaoj. He's got excellent takedown defense. So, in fact, I would say that a fight with Brett Imes is a better fight for Roy Nelson than Hinkle. Hinkle's a much better wrestler than Nelson and could grind out a decision on top. Great ground and pound with Hinkle. I think a fight between Imes and Harris has the potential to be a bang fest. And in fact, due to reasons of Imes' chinniness, I give Nelson a very good chance of winning this fight. In fact, I would put him to be the favorite. You know, it's unclear as to where he's going to go from here. You know, you got so many dominant wrestlers in the UFC. Let's say he were to be signed by them. You know, can he defend a takedown from Gabriel Gonzaga? Probably not, but I'd like to see it. And insofar as you probably gets a guy like Chet Congo, Nelson's going to be there beginning to end of that fight. He's a tough guy, and I got a lot of respect for him.
All right, well, okay, so that's going down tonight on HGNet. You can check it out if you have HGNet or through some other means online. The other big event going down this weekend, World Victory Road, Sengoku 2. And this is a weird one for me because Dream has come out sort of guns blazing with all these shows back-to-back, and I feel like for a minute there, people were starting to forget that, you know, World Victory Road was still around after their first good showing. This is their second installment, headlined by Josh Barnett going up against Jeff Monson. What's your take on World Victory Road right now? I mean, obviously, all the talk has been about Dream. They've had some controversial decisions. They've had, you know, great matchups. They just had one last weekend, so that's always good talk for the internet and the MMA fans. But World Victory Road kind of sliding under the radar now with this show. Do you think that they can actually be a viable player in this world of mixed martial arts?
Yeah, I do. I like what they're doing a lot. Now, I always have a problem with Japanese matchmaking. You know, pitting a guy like Ryo Kawamura against Kevin Randleman. They just throw these guys. Not that Kevin Randleman is some sort of world beater, but Kawamura is just, I just don't see it as a fair matchup. But that being said, people are quite on the Sengoku bandwagon because they're occupying a weird space. Before UFC brought Pride, we look at the Japanese scene, there was Pride, K1 Heroes, K1 Max was trying to sort of compete with Pride, but not really. They were mostly a kickboxing organization. And everything else was like GCM, ZST, and Shuto. So it was either sort of relatively low up-and-coming guys, and then this sort of sideshow that is K1, and then Pride was the leader. It's not clear what position between Dream and Sengoku that Sengoku's holding. Are they the same as Dream? Are they like a big B spot? Are they the Elite XC to Dream's UFC? I mean, it's not really clear what position they hold. But that being said, they've got a much better business model. They're not really interested, and I was talking with somebody else about this today, they're not really interested in having, you know, all this flash. I mean, yeah, it's Japan, and they want to have a nice big show, but they're developing fighters. They're developing a product based in honesty. They've got a guy who, the former, I think, police commissioner of Tokyo, who's helping to sort of lend legitimacy to the organization. They're really trying to distance themselves from the sort of Pride Yakuza lifestyle that Dream apparently has been wrapped up in again. And they you know, for I think they don't allow elbows, but they allow the unified rules. So they're really trying to build an honest, competitive organization, and more importantly, they're not trying to go to the Saitama Super Arena. They're going to be in the Ariake Coliseum in Tokyo, which only holds about 10,000. So they're not trying to put on this gigantic, mesmerizing spectacle. They're trying to do the right thing, make good shows with good fights, keep the bottom line in mind, and build an honest product, and I like what they're doing.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of in the world of professional wrestling, which there's always a lot of similarities between MMA and wrestling. Ring of Honor is a company that just tries to go about things slowly, put on great matchups, and the hardcores always seem to, you know, gravitate towards them, and slowly but surely the other people as well will start to take notice. Nevertheless, there's a lot of interesting names on this card. One in particular is Hodger Gracie going up against an MMA veteran in the form of Yuki Kondo, a guy who's had over 50 fights in his career, and when you look at it on paper, obviously in terms of their experience, it's a mismatch, but anytime you have a Gracie involved, there's a lot of buzz. This is a guy who we haven't seen since December of 2006, fighting for the now-defunct Bodog fight promotion, and there's a lot of buzz surrounding him, if he could be another one of the great Gracies. So let me ask you kind of a two-parter here. Do you think that Gracie is sort of worthy of all the hype? And what do you think of the matchup, putting up a guy with so many fights in his career as Kondo has, up against a guy like Gracie?
Let me tell you about his view. I've talked to a lot of high-level grapplers. In the jiu-jitsu world, this guy is God. I mean, he is in the minds of many, many, many grapplers, this guy is as good as it gets, and that includes Marcelo Garcia. What he's able to do is just unreal, and he's a young guy, 26. Submitting all of his opponents at Abu Dhabi is like, this is unheard of. Submitting multiple time world champions is just not something that people you just can't wrap your head around how good this guy actually is when the fight hits the floor. In terms of matchmaking, I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it because Yuki Kondo, while can't touch Hodger Gracie in terms of jiu-jitsu, is an experienced guy, veteran guy, fought all kinds of different opponents. So in that sense, they're not giving Gracie somebody who is, he's just a clown. I don't want to call Ron Waterman a clown. He's a very good fighter, but the guy who is tailor-made for Hodger Gracie style. But Kondo is much smaller. So I wonder how much that's going to sort of play into it, if he's going to be able to use Hodger Gracie, he's going to be able to use his size and athleticism to make Kondo pay. So I think it's a very interesting fight. I think it's a good challenge for Gracie. We'll see what happens, but I suspect that he'll win.
Okay, interesting. Okay, let's move on now to some other topics that were making news this week in the world of mixed martial arts. Of course, the Tough 8 announcement of Frank Mir and Minotauro Noguera going to be the coaches for Tough 8. This was something that was rumored for some time, and obviously now we know it's official. Spike TV and the UFC announced it. It's been met with sort of a lukewarm reception, especially online. People have their doubts as to, is Noguera and Mir, are they a good matchup? In terms of the heavyweight title, but as two of the mainstays on that show, guys will be following for several weeks when Tough 8 comes around. I'd like to ask you two questions about it. The first, what do you think of the decision to put those two guys as coaches for Tough 8? And B, what do you think of Frank Mir getting the title shot after everything he's gone through, the victory over Brock Lesnar now, and then right away he's getting a shot at the title?
Well, he also beat Anthony Hardonk as well.
Oh,
so,
right. That's huge.
So he beat two guys, but he beat two guys who are at least at this point not really high level MMA fighters, and he gets a title shot. But he gets a title shot. I just don't know. I don't like it. I don't like the Ultimate Fighter, the way in which they do this. I'm not Dana White, and it's not my bottom line they have to worry about. And I'm sure in the war room between himself and the Spike producer, this all sort of makes sense to them. But to fans, from our perspective, there are a lot of problems. I mean, you're going to tell me that in 16 months, the title has only been defended three times, and two of those, one of those at least was an interim title. This is like the delays that this show has put on the title thing is just unbelievable. Noguera, while a fantastic champion, not the most charismatic guy. I mean, you want to talk about, they have Forrest Griffin and Rampage Jackson this season, who are great selections as coaches, and then they go the exact opposite way and pick two cerebral, thoughtful, not very controversial guys in Frank Mir and Antonio Noguera. It's the complete opposite. I don't know exactly what the buzz is supposed to be about that. So, Noguera deserves to be where he is, but in terms of how the show is just like the biggest wrench in the common flow of fight sport, and it creates a new flow every time. And sometimes it pays off, but sometimes it doesn't. And I'm just kind of tired of having the belt delayed for a year plus to the altar of a show that I don't really find that fun anymore.
There's been a lot of talk as to what needs to be done to change TUF, to make it more interesting for the fans. Would you like at least, who knows, you know, how much they're going to blow this concept up? They promised us a lot of changes for this season, and it was, you know, kind of minimal. They had everyone fighting to get in the house, but that was pretty much it. Would you like for them at least to go back to the original version of the show where it was just two fighters and they're coaching, you know, a group of eight fighters each, and that's it, it ends? Or, you know, as opposed to now using it as a platform to build to these pay-per-view fights?
Again, you know, it's hard for me to actually answer Andy's questions, because I don't know what the criteria are for Dana White and the Spike producers and whoever else is involved in deciding these matters. I don't know what criteria they're using. I like to see that broken down, because then I can make a better evaluation and say, okay, if these are your criteria, let's see if these are fair. And if they are fair, let's see if you're applying them correctly. I don't really feel capable of answering either of those questions. What I can say, though, is that in the current format, it's done. It's run its course. It's cooked. You can only do the same thing with minor tweaks so many times before people get bored. And granted, you know, on the one hand, you can say, you know, well, because I've seen every single episode of every single season, well, that's why I'm burned out. But, you know, Seinfeld's still on TV. If your product is good, people will watch it over and over and over again, including good sports. So I don't really buy that. Look, people have tossed around the idea of make it live, or get UFC superstars and have it be an all-star cast, or sort of all these things. And I don't really know what the right answer is. I would like to make it live, but who knows what the production challenges are. I mean, look, you know, a live fight is better than any other kind of fight, period. But who knows what the production challenges are. You know, you want to have UFC superstars, great, but are they really willing to live in a house? And if they're not, what are you going to do, go to their training camp? Training is boring unless you're training. It's boring to watch. It's not fun to watch. Training is only cool if you're training. So the answer is difficult. I just think that it's a telltale sign that the theme song is the same, the production elements are the same, more or less they're living in the same house. I think they've updated it maybe one or two times. Everything is the same. It's worn out. It really needs what I like to call brand revitalization.
Very reminiscent of their broadcast in general, the pay-per-view. It's the same Gladiator Open, kind of all the same elements. So, yes. Probably the UFC needs to revamp things a little. I will say, having worked there before at Spike, I know that going live would be totally out of the question. Way too expensive and not really worth it for them, given the ratings that the show generates. Let me ask you one final topic. Obviously, Affliction on everyone's mind. Every day there seems to be another new piece of information about their upcoming card on July 19th. First, now we heard that the show is being moved to the Honda Center in Anaheim. Now we're getting more word about the formation of the card. And the big one, there seems to be one big question mark out there, and that is, who is Ben Rothwell going to face? And all the rumors are surrounding Andrei Arlovsky. Have you heard anything out there in terms of whether or not Arlovsky is going to, in fact, sign with Affliction once that period ends, where he doesn't, you know, where the UFC is, you know, entitled to match any offers? Or are you hearing that he may go somewhere else?
I am hearing that in all likelihood he will leave the UFC. This is from people very close to his management camp. Affliction's going to pay him a lot of money, and the UFC really wants to keep him, and I think that they are willing to pay a pretty high price for him, because remember, Sylvia got out of his contract before his contract actually finished. UFC let him go, and Couture just walked. Arlovsky is actually the only guy to let it finish out. Played by the rules, did it the right way, even though they put him on the undercard in his last fight. And you know, because he played by the rules and because the UFC actually does want to do business with him, I think that puts him in a better spot in this negotiating period. But I don't think he likes the way he's been treated by the UFC. You know, part of it's his own fault for not pulling the trigger enough in his last fights. But based on what I've heard, he will be fighting Ben Rothwell. I think he'll announce it as early as next week.
Are you excited for this card? I mean, obviously we have Fedor, we have Tim Sylvia, and you look, you know, down the line, it's very stacked. Do you think that you, as well as everyone else in the MMA community, can actually be? Let me rephrase that. Will the MMA community sort of gravitate to a card like this that is not attached with the name UFC, go down and plunk $30 to $40 pay up to, you know, maybe 100,000 buys to get this thing actually rolling with all the money that's being pumped in it. Do you think that enough people will have interest in it, even though the UFC is not attached?
I definitely don't think that people will have interest in it. I think that people tend to get the blogosphere and other kinds of fans tend to talk to each other and not really sort of look around at what's going on. Go to a UFC show. Go and look at the type of people that go to the show. For better or worse, that's who they are. Guaranteed, Joe Lauzon is more popular than Fedor or more well-known. Guaranteed. I would bet my house on that. And that's I'm telling you, there is no way people know who he is. And they do know who Tim Sylvia is, and they hate him. Don't know who Josh Barnett is. Don't know who Pedro Hizo is. Don't know who Ben Rothwell is. Know Arlovsky, but may not even know he's fighting on this card since he's sort of announcing it relatively late. Matt Lindland, don't know who he is. Nagao, don't know who he is. I mean, I can go on and on and on. They don't know who these people are. These people are big-time stars for you and for me, and they are legitimately the top of the top, but it doesn't matter. Kimbo Slice couldn't beat any of the heavyweights on this card, and he is going to do way bigger numbers and always has done way bigger numbers. That's just a fact. Look, people don't want to absorb the idea that you know, the NFL, if you are cornerback and you get constantly beat on the route, you're going to be benched to be cut. In fight sport, it doesn't quite work that way. There's such an entertainment aspect built into it that you don't have to be the best fighter because they'll match up with somebody who is going to make you look good, and if for some whatever reason fans respond to that, you've got a career. Not to say Kimbo Slice will never be good. I'm just saying that's sort of where he's at right now, and that's fine. That's how fight sport works. That's why Gary Shaw is doing well, and Baz Rutten understands that, and so does Kimbo Slice. So I don't think the show is going to do well at all. That being said, it's an awesome show, and I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to support it. And I hope it does well. I hope I'm wrong, but there's no reason to believe that any of these names are going to catch on.
You know, they always say that those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Are they going down the same road that Bodog went, putting all this money into their shows, these internet sort of names that, as you mentioned, the general MMA public doesn't know about, and then, you know, 3, 4, 5 maybe shows down the line, boom, they're gone?
I don't think this is the same as Bodog. Bodog really wanted to create a brand new league, and they wanted to go head-to-head with the UFC with a massive bankroll. Affliction, I don't think they want to go head-to-head with the UFC. I think what they're trying to do is, it's hard for me to say because I'm not exactly certain. Right, you look at the WEC, what are they doing? Oh, that's the home for important lightweight fighters. You know, we know what the UFC is about. Oh, you look at the Elite XC, what are they doing? Well, they're a competitor, but they have these amazing stars, and also they have women fighting. That's sort of like what they're bringing to the table. Affliction is bringing stars to the table that have no star power. And so I guess what they're trying to do is put on good shows, but I don't know how long you can do that without a roster to go to. Josh Gross talked about this recently. You know, Matt Hughes filled in and is fighting Thiago Alves, so that wasn't the original matchup, but he's able to come in because the UFC can call it on the reserves. I mean, keep in mind, the UFC's reserves are Matt freaking Hughes. That's a big deal. Elite XC was scrambling, and this Jake Shields, Drew Thicket fight that will never be, it seems, they're constantly having to find ways around this because they don't have a deep roster. Well, Affliction's roster is even thinner than that. So unless the second and third shows are miraculously very profitable, and again, I'm not wishing them they will. I hope that they are, but it seems that the odds are not in their favor. So unless those are seemingly some sort of resounding success and fighters are just, you know, chomping at the bit to be Affliction fighters, I don't see how there can be a long-term game here. At least with Bodog, they were snatching up talent left and right, even smaller, lesser-known guys, so they could sort of build divisions. But that doesn't seem to be really what Affliction's all about. I don't know how long that can last.
If I could put you on the spot, how many buys do you think they'll generate?
Tough to say. I mean, look, the card for Hardcore, I mean, this is a not-miss. If you are a Hardcore fan, you miss this. You suck. This is so, you know, I guess that we're going to get, this is almost like an informal way to figure out how many Hardcore fans there are, at least Hardcore fans with $40. I would say, you know, sir, before I have to go back on what I estimated before. So before I estimated 100K, I definitely am going to move back on that. I would say at the good end, maybe 50 to 75K, more likely between 25 and 50K pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, I would say closer to 50, maybe 40 or so. And you're right, that should be deemed a success, even though truly It won't be. Luke, great talking with you as always. The site, bloodyelbow.com, one of the best MMA sites on the internet. Always a pleasure to be talking with you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.